Let me just say that I've really enjoyed our study of Daniel, especially once we've gotten into the text, primarily because I don't have to just listen to myself talk. Once we've entered into the text, we've had a lot of great comments, a lot of great insight, and other perspectives that's been offered by many of the members here, and I'm grateful to have that. I'm grateful to be able to see outside of the realm of my narrow-minded perspective oftentimes, and to hear some of the other thoughts and some of the other things that I've missed. I've studied this text pretty thoroughly, but yet it's impressive to see that, you know, just a few comments from other people bring light to things that I've not considered. So I appreciate everyone's insight and everyone's participation in our study together. That's the purpose of us being here, not simply to listen to me talk. That's, you're not going to get just a whole lot from that if that's all you're here for, I'm afraid. But to study God's Word, to open up our Bibles together and to consider together the things that we find therein, and then to look for the application that we can. We're going to be picking up our studies there in Daniel 1, chapter 1, verse 8. And we talked about the application portion of this last week, primarily that concept that Daniel purposed in his heart or resolved in his mind not to eat of the king's delicacies. So we want to kind of take that after we looked at the application portion and how that applies to me and what that means to me as I strive to serve God. Let's look at that a little bit more within the context of what's being said here in verse 8, in the context of Daniel and the situation that he's facing. I think we're on question 8, and that's where we'll just pick up for this particular question. Question 8, why might Daniel and his friends have been defiled by eating the king's delicacies? Okay. Right. Right. You can go back to, it's, I believe, Leviticus 11 and Deuteronomy 12 that give the dietary specifications that the Jews were prohibited from eating and what they were allowed to eat. So there were very strict guidelines as far as those who were living under the Mosaic law as to what they could eat. Certain things were deemed clean. Certain things were deemed unclean. You remember the prerequisites, and this is kind of off topic, the prerequisites for animals that they would eat, what made an animal clean versus unclean? Okay, split hoof, and cloven hoof, and chewed the cud. So had to have both of those things. If it only possessed one of the qualities, then it was deemed unclean. They couldn't eat it. So I was reading through some comments on this, some of the information that I came across, and there must have been 10 different reasons that scholars have offered why Daniel and his friends purposed not to eat the king's meat and to drink of the king's wine. And a lot of them didn't make a lot of sense, or I believe, or at least a far stretch. One in particular that stands out that said, well, if Daniel and his friends would have eaten from the king's table, then they would have been relying upon the king for his provision, and that would have been accepting the situation that they were in, and they'd be turning their back on God. And that's stretching what I believe we have here. Much simpler explanation, I believe, can be found. One of the things that Tommy mentioned, because the things that they were being fed probably would have stood in opposition to the things that they were commanded that they could and could not eat. So they were having things in front of them that they probably were told as Jews, you're not supposed to eat these things, and they probably never eaten them before in their life. And so that could be one of the reasons. Can you think of anything else? Dave? Okay. Right. Right. And those are the two most significant reasons I could imagine why Daniel and his friends might have resisted the king's meat that was being placed in front of them, the king's food that was being placed in front of them. One, because as Tommy said, it probably was in opposition to what they were commanded they couldn't eat. And as David just mentioned, very possibly been sacrificed to a pagan god, whether it be meat or whether it be vegetable. I probably would lean more toward the meat. You think about a New Testament passage where this is an issue, and it's where Paul's writing to the Corinthians. Do you remember there the command that Paul gave the Corinthians whenever they would go and they would eat, the Jews would eat with their Jewish friends. You remember what he said? Don't ask. Don't ask, and don't ask, and your conscience won't be offended. You know, and if you consider Daniel and this situation here, perhaps a simple diet would have been the best way to really deal with any of the concerns that he may have had, whether the meat had been unclean for him to eat, or whether it might have possibly offended his conscience because this meat or these things that were being placed in front of him might have been previously used in idol worship, and he didn't want any part of that. So I believe those are the two likeliest reasons as to why Daniel made that decision, why he purposed in his heart not to eat of the king's delicacies. I really want you to appreciate the degree that Daniel went to here, to serve God, to do what he knew to be right. Paul told those Christians, and we just mentioned this, went to eat with a brother, don't ask any questions, just eat what's put there in front of you. Daniel might have been the very same way. He might have reasoned in his mind through perhaps a humanistic way of thinking, well, it's better off if I just don't ask any questions and I just eat this food that's being placed in front of me. However, he would have known that it would have been an opposition to everything that he believed, everything that he practiced. Move on to verse 9. Now God had brought Daniel into the favor and the goodwill of the chief of the eunuchs. So we'd mentioned previously, and Bill had asked last week, aren't we able to see God's involvement here with what's taking place in Daniel? And we notice, as we see here in verse 9, who was it that brought Daniel into the goodwill and favor of the chief of the eunuchs? Well, it was God that did so. Now, I think we're going to look at and see in a minute that this wasn't God miraculously placing the chief of the eunuchs under some sort of irresistible sway where he had this attraction to Daniel's personality, where I don't think that we're talking about anything like this. Rather, you see God's involvement, but in the very providential sense. And what you've got here, what we know about Daniel, he's a young Jew, he's faithful, he's God-fearing, we can assume he's intelligent, he's probably respectful. And when you've got someone like that, people have a tendency to just be drawn to those kind of personalities. Someone who's young and respectful and intelligent, you're just kind of drawn to that person. And so it's no far stretch for us to see that thus Daniel falls in favor of his captor, the one who's overseeing his protection, who's overseeing his education. And it wasn't by divine intervention, but rather it's by the providence of God in that how God works to these days, that he was just drawn to this young man because of the character that he possessed. We see that he's drawn into the favor and the goodwill of the chief of the eunuchs. And literally what this might be interpreted as is that God gave Daniel for grace and mercies before the chief warden. Despite the fact that you've got Babylon, who's this military might, this military power, who at this time is stronger than any nation on the face of the earth, you've got at the same time the ultimate sovereign creator, God, who is influential over the world's most powerful rulers. And even in this place of infamous wickedness and infamous cruelty, God is at work providing for those who are faithful. This should be reassuring to us because we've talked a little bit about, I mentioned this morning, consider the state of the world. And it can be somewhat intimidating. It can cause us a bit of fear and unrest. But this is the promise that we have here, the very same promise that Daniel we see provided for Daniel. That Daniel is committed and determined in his mind, I'm going to remain faithful to God no matter what it's going to cost me. And what do you see right here other than God? And the writer makes this clear, God is providing for Daniel. God is protecting Daniel amidst this very dangerous and this very tumultuous and restless Babylonian empire. God is protecting him. God is at work preserving those who are faithful. And so no matter what this world may come to, no matter what situation we may find ourselves in, politically, as a nation, if we're faithful to God, then God's going to take care of us. God's going to provide. That's a promise that he's made, and we see that fulfilled right here in Daniel 1:9, as God is involved in Daniel's further protection, as we're going to see as the story continues to unfold. He's extended to Daniel the very same grace that Joseph had received whenever he was imprisoned in Egypt. Remember how Joseph's story came out, how he was imprisoned, but yet he fell in favor of the one who watched over him. And he moved up the ranks within that prison to a very trustworthy and authoritative position. And that same grace that had been extended to that faithful man, Joseph, is once again extended here to Daniel, and based off of his faithfulness, his desire to serve God. God works in his life. God provides for him this protection. And in both of these instances, God provides for his faithful saints whenever they live up to the faithfulness and they defer to that faithfulness that they have in God. God provides that protection for them. Comments, questions on either of these verses? Right, and you know, this Daniel's going to make a request, and we'll go over to verse 10. The chief of the eunuchs said to Daniel, "I fear the Lord King, who's appointed your food and drink, for why should he see your faces looking worse than the young men who are your age?" So, Daniel makes this request to the man with whom he is in his favorable position. And if he were miraculously under the work of God, then he would have said here, okay, let's do it. We'll do whatever it is that you want. But you see his free will in this and say, I might lose my head if I make any changes, significant changes to the instruction and the diet and the way these young men are being molded. So I better not risk my neck to that degree. So, as Dave said, we see once again how the grace and the mercy extended by God to Daniel is at play. We're dealing with this pagan country. And patience and long-suffering and understanding and compassion are not the leading characteristics of this nation, this Babylonian nation. Rather, they rule with an iron fist. They rule by violence, by intimidation, by a dictatorship. That's just the way this nation was run. And you've got this chief of eunuchs here. He could have taken Daniel's request to mean anything. Hey, what if this young man here is trying to start some sort of uprising, and this is the very first step that he's using to kind of test the waters, to see how far I might bend, to take advantage of me? He might have said something like that. That perhaps would have been the natural thought process of one who was in this Babylonian empire. What if he's trying to make trouble for me? Perhaps he could have reported Daniel to his supervisor for insubordination. Well, you've got this young guy and his friends over here. They're not wanting to keep to the diet, the king's food, it's not good enough for them. They're trying to make trouble. He perhaps could have done something like this, but that's not his response. His response, rather, is like, I can't do anything about it. I can't do anything about it. And he responds by saying he doesn't want to risk his own life by being so presumptuous as to change their diet without any permission from the king. And he goes on to say in verses 11 and 12, what we see then Daniel doing in response to that, Daniel said to the steward, whom the chief of eunuchs had set over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, "Please test your servants for 10 days, and let them give us vegetables to eat and water to drink." And so, unable to convince the head of the academy, that is, the chief of the eunuchs, Daniel goes to a man who was in more direct control, more direct influence over the things that occurred in his regiment on a daily basis. He goes to his steward, we're told here in verse 11, since he couldn't convince the chief of eunuchs. And he kind of changes his request a little bit. You notice that? He changes his request where previously he said, let us have something to eat other than what's placed before us on the king's table. He changes that up a little bit. And you really see the wisdom of this man and the influence that he has modifying this request. Initially he asked that it may not be defiled. This time he only requests not this complete change of diet, but rather, let's put this request that I've got to the test. We'll do this for 10 days. How bad could it be to just allow us to eat vegetables and water for 10 days and then compare us to the other young men? How much could go wrong in that short period of time? Real quick, Dick, would you mind turning over to Revelation chapter 2, verse 10? Just as a side note, and you're going to see this a lot, especially when we get into the latter portion of the book of Daniel, chapter 7, and onward throughout the rest of the book. You're going to see the book of Daniel tie in very heavily with Revelation. or rather I should say that John is using some of the language and some of the symbols and some of the things that Daniel was shown, and he's going to write of that in the book of Revelation. And this is really where you see the first influence in the book of Daniel carry over into the book of Revelation. Would you read Revelation 2:10 for us, Dick? Okay, so you kind of look at this, and the Jewish writing, the apocryphal writing, I'm sure many of the members here are quite familiar with apocryphal writing, and you're going to see that manifested over and over and over later in the book of Daniel. But John is writing to this group of Christians that are struggling to remain faithful, and they're getting to the point that they're beginning to be persecuted for their faith, and he says, you know, you're going to be tested for 10 days. And this 10-day testing period is somewhat referred to as a time of tribulation that they're going to undergo. And that's the same request that Daniel made. He said, let us be tested for 10 days. Let us undergo testing for 10 days. And then by comparison, you can look at us and you can determine if we're okay to continue with this dietary change and you don't have to worry about endangering your life by making this change for us. Does anyone else have any translation in back in the book of Daniel chapter 1? Verse 12. Does anyone else have a translation other than vegetables? Pulse? I wouldn't have known what in the world pulse was if it weren't for other versions that kind of gave me alternative translations. Some versions say vegetables. Some versions say pulse. We get here a Hebrew word that doesn't translate very nicely into the English language. The best description of what's being taken, what Daniel's requesting here, not necessarily vegetables, not necessarily pulse, but that which is grown from seed. That is, it may be fruit, it may be grain, it may be vegetables. It wasn't solely, okay, I'm just gonna eat only vegetables, but it could have been, it would have included bread, fruits, and vegetables as well. So this was his request, was, you know, let me put away this fine king's fare. Let me just eat as one of the common people. Because no doubt this would have been more of a commoner's meal than it would one of it was a ward of the king. So he makes this request. Yes, sir, David. That's a great point. You know, he doesn't like what he's dealing with, and you look at how people in this country. I notice all the time people in this country, rather than going through this prescribed way of dealing with an issue, you've got people that just completely rebel. That something takes place that they don't like, well, they just go out and shoot somebody or start shooting people. It's quite in opposition as to how what we see Daniel doing here, which Daniel's mentioned as having wisdom, being a young man of intelligence and kindness. We see Daniel not just pushing away from the table saying, okay, I'm not going to eat this stuff anymore. Bring me something else. I'm a ward of the king. Daniel goes about the right way, and so he asks the chief of eunuchs, hey, can we get something else in here? No, I don't want to risk that. And so then he goes to the steward who is overseeing his food, and he makes this polite request again. And once again, Daniel goes through the proper channels, and although he doesn't like what's taking place, he doesn't just completely rebel. He doesn't completely just throw up his hands and cause a big fuss over this, but rather he deals with it in a very respectful and appropriate manner. Verse 13 goes on to say, as Daniel's talking about this 10-day period in which he and his friends are going to change their diet, he then says, let our appearance be examined before you and the appearance of the young men who eat the portion of the king's delicacies, and as you see fit, so deal with your servants. And, you know, once again, kind of like you said, Dave, you see him. He's not saying this is how it's going to be, says me. He places it in the hand of the steward, of the one he's making the request of. He says, you know, you can then determine if we're as healthy as they are, the ones who are eating the king's meat versus us who are eating that which is grown from seed and drinking water. You can determine if we're as healthy as they are. You know, apparently this diet that was given them by the king, it was for the purpose of promoting their general health, their general well-being, and their attractive appearance. Daniel's making this request not because common food per se was healthier than the king's, but rather to honor his convictions, his religious beliefs, in that of a pagan society. And it's Daniel's faith and it's Daniel's confidence in God and his desire to do what God has commanded that I believe bring about this favorable result. Does anyone know what 1 Corinthians 10:13 says? No temptation has overtaken you, except such as is common to man, but God is faithful and will provide the way of escape so that you may be willing to able to bear it. You know, that's a very important passage for us to remember, that in times of temptation, God has promised, I'm going to provide a way of escape. And you consider Daniel and the circumstance that he was in. And perhaps these new foods were enticing. You know, he was a Jew. And there were a lot of things that he just never had eaten because he wasn't allowed to being a Jew. And these new foods, perhaps they smelled good and they looked good and everybody else seemed to be enjoying it and he was enticed by the new food, the new fare, the kingless place before him. Perhaps they would have been tempted to eat something that they'd never gotten to try before. But he goes and he asks for a different kind of food. And you know what? The first time he makes this request for these vegetables and this water, this change of diet, he's turned down. But why doesn't he say, here, okay, I've done what I could. I made my attempt to serve God and to stay true to the law that I was taught and to stay away from these foods that I'm not supposed to be eating, but I got turned down. I made a legitimate effort to do the right thing, but I got turned down. And so I don't really have a choice. It would have been easy for him to rationalize breaking these dietary commands. And I mean, it's not like he was out murdering. It's not like he was out committing some terrible act of stealing. He's just eating these things he's not supposed to be eating. And by contrast, it might not seem like that big a deal in accordance to the many other things that the children of Israel were commanded not to do. And he could have easily rationalized, well, this isn't really that bad. But, you know, that's not what we see Daniel doing. Yes, Miss Johnny. Okay. Right. I didn't think about that, but you're probably right. You can go back and you can read and you can look and you can see that the wine that they drank, and this is one of the reasons that I believe that the argument that drinking wine today is acceptable, biblically and religiously acceptable, because the wine that they drink was significantly watered down. I think it was two parts water, one part wine, if I remember correctly. And that's probably changed throughout Old Testament times, but these were the king's wards. We're talking about not a group of people that are trying to refrain from drunkenness, but a group of people that are hedonistic. They give in to the pleasures of the body and the desires that the body would have had. And so I imagine, like you, that they probably weren't being given this watered-down wine. They were probably given something stronger, you know, because, well, that would bring about more enjoyment to life, so why not? So that's very much a possibility that the wine that they were being offered was higher in alcoholic content than the watered down that they would have drank. But you see Daniel here at this time looking for this way of escape. And this is the lesson for us, that we're never going to be in a position where we absolutely have to stand. Sin. If God sees us standing true to our convictions and our desire to stand true to our convictions is what we're going to do. If we purpose in our heart, no matter what happens, I'm not going to sin, then God's going to provide the way of escape. That's what he does here for Daniel. And it might have seemed like I can rationalize this in my mind if I were Daniel. But Daniel stood true to his convictions, and God delivered him. He wasn't placed where he ended up having to sin by eating that meat and drinking that wine, but rather his request, after time and effort, after he seeks that way of escape, is heard. Dave, you're going to make a comment? Right.
It's nice to see that. You know, we're talking about the application and the end and all these things that you can pull from this first chapter. And that's one of the things that I'd like to see this wholehearted conviction.
Now, what if we would do that more often? I don't know about y'all, but I like to try to kind of solve my own problems. And I'm dog-headed enough sometimes, I don't realize when it's better just to, you know, there's nothing else I can do about this. You know, I'm going to pray about it. I'm going to beseech God about it. I'm going to do everything that I can. But I'm going to have to realize that this is up to God. That it's up to God to see me through this and to provide whatever is that way of escape or whatever it may be. And that's what we see Daniel doing. He realizes that there are certain things that he can do and certain things he can do. He does everything that he can in his power short of sinning. But then it comes to a point where, as Dave said, as he said at the end of verse 13, you deal with it as you see fit. He's telling that steward that, but what he's really doing is he is expressing his faith in God to provide him some sort of outlet. So he's placing it in God's hands because he's realized there's nothing else that I can do about it at this point in time. If the chief of the eunuchs won't hear and the steward won't hear, then there's nowhere else I can go. And so he just places it in God's hands. And it's that very faith and that attitude that he has when he gives it up to God that God delivers. God brings about the request that he made. So, great point there. Any other comments? Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. And you're right. Oftentimes we think about it, and don't misconstrue what I said. And I know you didn't. But whenever we say God's going to provide the way of escape, or God's going to take care of things, we think, okay, well, that means God's going to see me through this physical circumstance that I'm facing. And as for Daniel here, that very well could have been the case. But what you turn over to Daniel chapter 3 and you read about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and if the laws of nature would have carried that course, then those three men that just like Daniel purposed in their heart to serve God, that said, okay, you know what? I'm not bowing down to this idol because I'm told not to bow down before idols. If, when thrown into that fiery furnace, their bodies were devoured and their lives were lost, as was pointed out, their way of escape would have been, as God promised, their souls would have been delivered. They walked by faith. They lived by faith. They died in faith. And according to God's word, walking, living, and dying by faith leads us to fulfill all that God's called us to do. And while they might not have had that physical deliverance, they were preserved. And I think sometimes us losing sight of the big picture and being so living in this physical world, we get it in our mind that God's going to provide for me and he's going to see me through whatever it is I may be facing physically in this life. And maybe it's some major illness or something like that, and that's not always the case. Our deliverance may not always be in the sense that God is going to preserve our physical life. But the promise that we do have, no matter what, if we're faithful, is that God will preserve us into his heavenly kingdom. And that's ultimately the big picture here, that both Daniel, I believe, and his friends are going to realize that it doesn't matter what happens to me in this life. God may choose to preserve me, and that's exactly what they said. God has the power, if he wants to preserve our life. But even if he doesn't, we're going to trust in him. They trusted fundamentally in the promise that God had made to deliver his faithful children. And that is, although my life may not be spared, God's spiritually going to preserve me. And that's ultimately, in the big picture, in the big scheme of things, that's what's most important. That's what we see Daniel living by, making his decision by. And we need to bear those things in mind as well. And thankfully, we don't live in a time and in a world where our lives are threatened to the degree that these young men were on a frequent basis. But we need to have the same faith that they had. That even if our circumstances were different, that no matter, like Job said, even if he slays me, still I'm going to trust in him. That we have that attitude, faithful to God until death, regardless of whatever may come. That doesn't mean we necessarily go seeking that out, but if we're having to choose between, okay, I'm going to give in and I'm going to sin, or I might do something that may cost me my physical life, I'm going to be faithful to God. So, great points. I appreciate you bringing those out. Any other comments on these verses? Steve. Mm-hmm. Right. Right. Well, I think that choice, you know, though, was always there. Daniel could have kept his mouth shut despite having the vision, the meaning of the visions revealed to him. He could have, you know, refrained from saying anything, said, you know what, I'm not going to tell King Nebuchadnezzar anything. And he could have died for it. But I always think you've got that free moral agents. And we pointed out last week one of the points we made, I think it was Dave that mentioned this, we've all got a choice to make. We can choose to be a tool. We can choose to be used in service to God, as we see Daniel doing. And as later, as we're going to find out in Nebuchadnezzar, the effect that Daniel has and his friends have on Nebuchadnezzar. Or we can choose not to use our talents and use our abilities in service to God. And you know what? God's going to provide another way. Whether it be teaching someone the gospel or whether it be here, in like in the book of Esther, the delivering of a nation, God's going to provide a way. God's sovereign. God's will is going to be done. We just have to determine, okay, how am I going to play into that? Am I going to use what God's given me to serve Him? Or am I going to use it to work against Him? Or am I just going to not do anything at all? So, great point. No. I understand. I think we all understood that. But that was a good point you made. You do see God's involvement very heavily in this book, all throughout the book. And we're going to be getting to chapter 2, I imagine, next week. And we're going to see the involvement of God in the life of a man who isn't faithful, who isn't a believer. So it'll be interesting to look at Daniel chapter 2 as we proceed with our study. Yes, sir, Dave. Mm-hmm. With the idols. And he finally gets it, though. It seems, doesn't it? It seems like he finally gets it. History may tell us, but you know, you think about that, and thus you have the sway of this physical world and the desires of this physical body. You know, that's powerful. And you've got Nebuchadnezzar, who on one hand is given this vision by God, and he's given its meaning, and Daniel's not able to only tell him what the dream means, but he's able to tell him what the dream is without having to know. You see, there's something divine going on in that. And he's going to find out later at the fiery furnace, as those three young men are preserved. You figure he'd be catching on. But on the other hand, you got Solomon, who's the wisest man in the world, and he does some of the dumbest things as well. And he had a knowledge of God. God came and God spoke to him, but yet he gave in, once again, to those physical desires. And it's hard to understand sometimes how could they do that. But it seems to be the way of man.